Hey, everybody. It's the Charlie Kirk Show. Matt Gaetz joins us to walk us through the latest drama in the debt ceiling fallout. As always, you can email us, freedom@charliekirk.com, and subscribe to our podcast. Open up your podcast app and type in Charlie Kirk Show and hit subscribe. Get involved with Turning Point USA at tpusa.com. That is tpusa.com. Start a high school or college chapter today at tpusa.com. That is tpusa.com. Buckle up, everybody. Here we go.
Charlie, what you've done is incredible here.
Maybe Charlie Kirk is on the college campus.
I want you to know we are lucky to have Charlie Kirk.
Charlie Kirk's running the White House, folks.
I want to thank Charlie. He's an incredible guy. His spirit, his love of this country. He's done an amazing job building one of the most powerful youth organizations ever created, Turning Point USA.
We will not embrace the ideas that have destroyed countries, destroyed lives, and we are going to fight for freedom on campuses across the country. That's why we are here.
Brought to you by the loan experts I trust, Andrew and Todd at Sierra Pacific Mortgage at andrewandtodd.com. Matt Gaetz, welcome to the program. Matt, tell us about what happened yesterday. A lot of news. You guys struck down a rule vote. A lot of this parliamentarian stuff, I don't even quite track. But it was symbolic because it was done as a message of outrage against the debt ceiling vote. Matt Gaetz, the floor is yours.
As you know, Charlie, in January, there was an agreement with Speaker McCarthy that allowed him to ascend to that position. And that agreement has been violated. He had a obligation not to put any legislation on the floor that did not return our spending to 2022 levels in exchange for raising the debt limit. That did not happen. There were no commensurate fiscal reforms that otherwise would have ameliorated our concerns about accruing this $4 trillion in debt. So where do we go from here? We can't just have a violation of that agreement and proceed as if nothing happened. We have to reconstitute the power-sharing agreement between Kevin McCarthy and House conservatives. And until we reconstitute that agreement, it's my suspicion that we're not going to simply allow him to play out failure theater on the floor of the House of Representatives.
So walk us through it, Matt. Does that mean that you're going to do a motion to vacate, or is that really not in the cards? Is this kind of is this a family squabble? Is this going to pour into maybe you calling for a leadership change? Walk us through some of the inside baseball here.
I don't want to vacate and I don't want to placate. I see no reason to turn Speaker McCarthy into a martyr for the establishment. I really want Speaker McCarthy to be the most successful House Speaker in American history. But we're not going to get there by making repeated $4 trillion mistakes. And that's what we saw. I mean, weren't you upset when you saw that it wasn't Joe Biden who wanted to suspend the debt limit until 2025? It was Kevin McCarthy.
It was perplexing.
Kevin McCarthy's idea. It was his idea to take spending off the table before the election. In addition to that being a sellout of the American people, it is one of the dumbest tactical political moves one could imagine, because we're winning on the issue of spending. People see that government spending is causing inflation. And so if we could re-ripen that issue and go take another bite out of Joe Biden before the election, that would be wise. Kevin McCarthy exceeded the authority that he was given. He viewed the Limit Save Grow Act as a permission slip to freelance, and we must now correct that misassessment.
So the correcting of the assessment, what is this rule vote stuff, Matt? Again, I only understand it. Most people say rules. What are you talking about? Again, go ahead.
We took over the floor. The bottom line is Kevin McCarthy has to have a coalition with someone to be able to operate the floor. And that coalition either is with House conservatives, which it was during the first 5 months of his speakership, or that coalition is with Hakeem Jeffries, as it was on the debt limit. And our message to Kevin McCarthy is that he has to be monogamous with one coalition or the other. He can't put House conservatives on his arm and parade us around for 5 months and then go jump in the back seat with Hakeem Jeffries when he wants to do a $4 trillion debt limit deal, expecting he'll be welcomed back home by House conservatives. So if he's going to have a monogamous coalition with Hakeem Jeffries, then let's lay that bare before the country and let's see how well that goes for him. It didn't allow him to get a vote on a matter he wanted to take a vote on yesterday, but we're not going to be the entity in this relationship that watches him go and engage in a dalliance with Jeffries and then welcome him back with open arms.
So this looks like a squabble. What concessions, what actions, what behaviors would satisfy you and your colleagues? Say, okay, we're back on track. Anything? I'm sure there's something, right? Because, Matt, we'd admit there's some good stuff that we're seeing, right? Some of the oversight stuff I like. So what do you think is the ask? What is the ask to remedy this speed bump?
Well, what we have done so far is we have presented to Speaker McCarthy the violation of the core element of the agreement that allowed him to become Speaker. And we've asked him how he plans to remedy his violation. So far, his answers to us have been insufficient and inadequate. And so, you know, I'm not speaking for anyone but myself here, but I do think that we're going to have to revisit how House conservatives are represented on committees, how matters proceed to the floor, and what the doctrine is whenever Kevin McCarthy wants to go buy Democrat votes with earmark money over the farm bill or the national defense bill or any other measure that might come to the House. We have to understand that doctrine. So I don't know that it's a key deliverable so much as it's a reconstruction of the architecture of the power sharing agreement.
Okay, so legislatively, there's this pistol brace bill that might be coming up. There's some really big things. And then summer is kind of it's a hot, and then it gets totally dead, right? The recess is what, 2, 3, 4 weeks, 6 weeks almost. It seems like it's forever.
Yeah, we take a month off for about 7 weeks.
Take a month off for 7 weeks. So I think it's important that we start to make some real progress. At least we start to get some of this stuff figured out, right? And so, what are some of then the legislative asks that you and Congresswoman Boebert have? I mean, because this is not just, I'm sure, a detail thing. I'm sure there's other some stuff that says, hey, we have to accelerate, you know, some make goods. Is that correct?
Yeah, I'm in the original deal. There was a requirement for a vote on term limits. We haven't had that vote on term limits. In that original deal, there was a demand for a vote on a balanced budget. We haven't had a vote on a balanced budget. And so we have to have stronger enforcement to ensure that the things that are in writing that Kevin McCarthy agreed to actually come true and they don't just exist on a paper in someone's drawer. Now, you mentioned the pistol brace bill. That was supposed to be up this week. But because Andrew Clyde voted with me on the debt limit procedural matter, the vote it was pulled from this week as an act of punishment and retaliation. So think about this. This leadership team is so small and so petty that they would punish tens of millions of gun owners, many of whom are disabled veterans who use shooting braces in order to make a political point and to keep power. I do not like bullies. I do not tolerate bullies. And so if anyone thinks that they're going to push around House conservatives by threatening our bills or hurting our constituents, they've got another thing coming. I am also concerned that as you and I are having this discussion right now, the leadership is deciding whether or not to punish House conservatives by canceling the upcoming oversight hearing to hold Christopher Wray in contempt. So if the way to punish us is to help the FBI, I think that is an escalation of conflict within the Republican caucus, not a move back toward the unity that you and I and Speaker McCarthy all celebrated for quite some time before it was violated.
So let's get to some other news here, Matt. You're on House Judiciary Committee, and I'm sure you have some awareness. There's so many of these stories that are coming out, bribery allegations, you know, Hunter Biden this. It's all over the place. And the House is really on the case to try to get the goods so that we can actually start to get this crime syndicate that's running the White House right now to be held accountable. So Matt, where does this whistleblower stuff? We had Anna Paulina come on and they said the FBI is worried about a hitman's going to come after One-Eyed. What are you hearing? What are you seeing, Matt? 1 minute remaining.
I have met with the whistleblower who referenced the sourcing that was highly reliable regarding this corrupt act by the Bidens. So in pure terms, the labor to be performed first, did this $5 million bribe actually consummate? What we have is an allegation, but even against Joe Biden, there has to be rigorous evidence developed around that. Second, who was involved in shutting down this investigation? And to me, that's just as bad. If you had people at the FBI who were taking any derogatory information about the Bidens and downgrading it and labeling it Russian disinformation, then that is election interference happening in the highest echelons of our law enforcement and our national security state.
Look, are you concerned about the American K through 12 education system? Are you worried about what your children and your grandchildren are learning or honestly not learning in school? If you answer yes, my friends at Hillsdale College have a free resource for you. Hillsdale College understands the importance of education to the future of our country. They're now offering 10 free print copies of their recent issue of Imprimis. It's titled Education as a Battleground, written by Hillsdale College President Larry P. Arn. The special issue provides a factual account of the issues in the ongoing battle over education, explaining why parents and teachers, not unelected bureaucrats or activists, should guide what our children are learning. With Hillsdale College, you can make a difference in your community by distributing these copies of Imprimis at your church, local business, or even in your doctor's office. Do not miss this opportunity to arm yourself with the facts. Claim your 10 free copies of Education as a Battleground by visiting charlie4hillsdale.com. That's charlie4hillsdale.com. I love Hillsdale College. I'm an enthusiastic promoter of them. So check it out right now at charlie4hillsdale.com. Matt, I want to get your reaction to some breaking news here. Mike Pence is running for the presidency. Okay, yeah, there it is. Let's play cut 73, and then I want your reaction, Matt Gaetz.
But today, our country's in a lot of trouble. President Joe Biden and the radical left have weakened America at home and abroad. The American dream is being crushed under runaway inflation. Wages are dropping. Recession is looming. Our southern border is under siege, and the enemies of freedom are on the march around the world. And worse still, timeless American values are under assault as never before. We're better than this. We can turn this country around. But different times call for different leadership. Today, our party and our country need a leader that will appeal, as Lincoln said, to the better angels of our nature. I have long believed to whom much is given, much will be required. That's why today, before God and my family, I'm announcing I'm running for president of the United States.
Matt Gaetz, Mike Pence is running for the presidency. Your reaction?
I'm sure Mike Pence's voter is very excited about that announcement. Didn't see a big crowd there with him. And it bears some resemblance to the Chris Christie announcement we saw recently, which seemed to be attended about as thoroughly as a regularly sized homeowners association meeting. But in a way, Mike Pence and Chris Christie are victims in the political industrial complex because some consultant somewhere has convinced Mike Pence and Chris Christie that they might be president one day. I know it sounds crazy, but that consultant will get rich, win or lose, based on the existence of a campaign. But I don't see much of a lane for these folks. I mean, if Chris Christie had run in 2012, he might have won the presidency, but he missed his moment. Wait, you know, it's odd. Like, running for president's like a wave. You know, if you get out in front of it too early, like, you get just totally crashed, a Ron DeSantis type scenario. And if you wait too long, as Chris Christie did, missing his chance in 2012, you know, it can pass you by.
So there's all these candidates, Matt. The governor of Florida is running from your home state. And now there's some whispers that the mayor of Miami might be running for the presidency. Matt, Gaetz,
yes.
Your reaction?
Francis Suarez, the kind of Republican who endorsed Hillary Clinton over Donald Trump and the kind of Republican who endorsed Andrew Gillum over Ron DeSantis. Who knows? Francis Suarez may run with Andrew Gillum as his running mate, for all I know. But he's not the type of Republican we really think highly of in Florida. He's carved out a niche for himself in Miami, where his father also served in the same post as mayor. And I don't know that there's really a political reach for him beyond the 305.
So, Matt, I want to get your insight into this. I know we're kind of going boom, 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 but you can handle it. You're built for TV. By the way, when Matt Gaetz filled in on Newsmax, he had higher ratings than CNN. Is that right?
I did. I beat CNN one night and MSNBC the next.
All right, so now I'm really going to ask you the hard. Now you're at a level where I can ask you the curveballs and the sliders. So, Matt, the smart money, quote unquote, says Donald Trump's going to be indicted soon. He's basically saying it. Eric Trump seems to be saying it. This is very concerning. Jim Jordan has sent out a letter saying, you know, we want information about this. But, Matt, this is direct election interference. They're going to have Donald Trump under multiple indictments simultaneously. Your reaction?
I think his numbers will go up. I mean, think about what they're going to indict him for. a dispute with the archivist in the case of Barack Obama and Bill Clinton and the aforementioned Mike Pence and Joe Biden, you find documents that probably shouldn't be in the possession of these individuals. But only with Trump does this emerge in some sort of criminal prosecution. Only with Trump. And it's that type of double standard that fuels his political movement and his political prospects. So I think he's like the Incredible Hulk. The more you shoot at him, the tougher and stronger and more effective he gets. But it certainly says something far more dangerous about this justice system that in too many ways at the federal level has become the enforcement wing of the political left. And it's why I'm so mad we underwrote $4 trillion in debt to continue funding the whole thing. Like, if you're really mad about the FBI and the DOJ and the weaponized government, you should be voting with me in the United States Congress against the different things that gaslight their ability to continue to grow exponentially. So we use the power of the subpoena pretty effectively under Speaker McCarthy's leadership, and he is owed credit for that. But we don't use the power of the purse effectively, and that's where I'm trying to stiffen the spine of some of my Republican colleagues.
Matt Gaetz, you might have a career in cable television if you ever want to get out of Congress. In the meantime, please keep fighting. Thanks so much, Matt.
Thank you. I like what I'm doing now, but I appreciate the endorsement.
Very good. I wouldn't want to be a congressman, but glad you're there. Hey, everybody. Charlie Kirk here. Every day, the parallel economy grows bigger and bigger. It's powered by everyday Americans who are sick and tired of all the woke nonsense being jammed into every product they consume. Big mobile companies are no different. For years, they've been dumping millions into left-wing causes, and we had to take it because you need a cell phone and probably thought that there was no alternative, but there is. Patriot Mobile is America's only Christian conservative wireless provider. They proudly offer dependable nationwide coverage on all three major networks. Stop using woke wireless as they fund Pride Month and all this stuff. When you switch to Patriot Mobile, you're sending a message that you support free speech, religious liberty, the sanctity of life, Second Amendment, and our military veterans and first responder heroes. Their 100% U.S.-based customer service team makes switching easy. Just go to patriotmobile.com/Charlie or call 878-PATRIOT. Get free activation today with the offer code CHARLIE. Ask about their coverage guarantee while you're there. Get the same dependable service and take a stand for your values and make the switch today. PatriotMobile.com/Charlie or call them at 878-PATRIOT. Okay, joining us now is Libby Emmons, Editor-in-Chief of the Postmillennial and Human Events. Libby, welcome to the program. Fill us in about what happened in Glendale, California yesterday.
So in Glendale, you had some parents go out to a school board meeting. They have been protesting the school board there for some time, demanding that there's transparency of curriculum. Last night, parents went out. There's a large Armenian population as well. I talked to one mom who was filming inside the school board meeting and a dad who was actually outside watching what was going on. He told me that Antifa-type people showed up. They sided and segregated themselves with the proponents of LGBTQ curriculum in schools and then broke off and went to confront a group of Armenian men who were in a parking lot right nearby. At that point, from what I understand, one of the Antifa guys threw a punch at one of the Armenian men and a scuffle broke out.
Now, we want everyone to remain peaceful, but it sounds as if this whole thing was in self-defense of Antifa. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's my understanding. And there also has been substantial backlash against the Armenian community there, in part because so many Armenians have been opposed to LGBTQ indoctrination in schools. But it's not just the Armenian community. Hispanic parents who I've spoken to are equally opposed. Christian parents, they don't want this stuff being pushed on their kids. They want their kids to get a proper education and to not be indoctrinated. And this has been going on for well over a year that the school board has been directly opposed to parents and refusing to hear parents' concerns about all of this pride indoctrination. And this is from elementary schools all the way through high schools in the school district.
I am optimistic about one element of the story. First of all, I love Armenians. It's the oldest Christian country in the world. Most people don't know that. And they're being terrorized by the Turks. And it's just terrible. But a wrinkle to this is that ethnic populations in America, Armenians, Venezuelans, people that have anchors to the countries they came from, I'm not saying they're not American, they're American, but they certainly have, you know, tied roots to where they came from. They don't put up with this trans stuff. This is, Libby, do you have thoughts on this? This trans stuff is largely pushed by lily white liberals on the Upper East Side. Armenians, Turk, Venezuelans, Cubans, Venezuelans, Mexicans, Nicaraguans. And so tell us, am I hitting the mark on that, Libby?
Yeah, I think you are exactly right, Charlie. And we saw this actually a couple of years ago in the UK when a group of Muslim parents took it to the school board and said, stop indoctrinating our kids with all of this LGBTQ sex ed. And the school board in that case had to cave. And it's interesting, I was tweeting about this earlier, because you have the left right now at a distinct crossroads. Do they respect diversity of cultures and cultural customs? Or do they need to indoctrinate all the cultures of the world with LGBTQ ideology? Which one are they going to go for? It's actually interesting to me and sort of an odd thing where you have the left, the LGBTQ advocates, the social justice people always talking about how important it is to, well, they don't talk about it quite as much anymore, do they? And I think this is why. But they were talking for a long time about how important it is to respect cultural differences of all the cultures of the world and how bad it was for Christians to go out there and be missionaries and to try and share the word of Jesus Christ. And now their entire mission, from the organization GLSEN to the UN to the Biden administration across the board, is to go out there and force abortions and LGBTQ mm-hmm. and gender identity on all these countries. African countries are pushing back. I was at the UN Commission on the Status of Women a couple of years ago in 2019, and I heard from a woman from Kenya who was complaining to the UN about how they're pushing all of this money in Kenya for abortions and how Kenyan women want to have children. They want to be mothers. They need support to be mothers and to create families, yes. not to destroy them.
There's a paradox here. The left wants unlimited amounts of foreigners to come to America, but they don't want the cultural imperialism of white Upper East Side, men can give birth, I live a miserable life, so you should too. I mean, there is a belief, it's laughed out of the room. I mean, you talk to mm-hmm. a Syrian refugee, which really shouldn't be coming to America, that's a separate issue, but they're the ones that find this whole thing so repulsive. And again, the Armenian community, many of them have been here for multiple generations, but they are very, very clear about their love of the homeland and their connection. And so it's fitting that they're starting to push back against this. I want to play some tape here to give you a flavor of the energy on the ground. Play cut 75.
Asking little children what they sexually identify as. Children are not sexual beings, nor should they be. The sexualization of children is pedophilia.
Let's get to another tape here. And this is 74. I think this is a pro groomer man in a dress talking at the meeting. Play cut 74. Man in a dress talking about kids.
Dear DUSD school board, I want to say thank you for your service to this community. As a father of three, having a child in the school system since 2008, I want to thank you and your predecessors for helping to create an inclusive, diversified learning environment which allows our children to thrive. When my children learn about Armenian heritage, they're not being indoctrinated. My children learn about the KKK and white nationalism, they're not being indoctrinated into the Proud Boys.
Okay, so this guy's a father of three who's obviously a neurotic freak who needs help. So, Libby, you've been covering this for quite some time. I think we sat down at the Young Women's Leadership Summit last summer, talked about the transing of America, the gayest generation history, and I think we even had you on the Young Women's Leadership Summit the year before, and you'll be there again this weekend. Are you seeing progress on our side finally? Are you seeing some tangible, proven pushback?
You know, I really am. And it gives me so much hope when I talk to these parents in Glendale. The clip that you just played of that fella, that pro-groomer fella, was shot by a mom who I was speaking to who was inside the school board taking footage. And this parents group in Glendale actually started working with the parents group at Satakoi Elementary. And they've been teaming up on tactics, on trying to get this stuff out of schools. And I think what really happened, and it happened in part during COVID, was this whole mess of activists started coming for our kids. And American parents are not playing around with this anymore, and they just don't want it. And I love to see Moms for Liberty pushing back against it. They've given so many parents a voice. The Glendale parents are unified. They are giving parents a voice. And I talk to parents all over the country. I started doing this during COVID about COVID lockdowns and the school closures. And parents are just entirely opposed, and they don't want anyone messing with their kids. American parents have one huge thing in common, which is that they want the best opportunities for their children. And even if they are pro-LGBTQ, that whole agenda, they are opposed to having it be the focus of education. Parents want their kids to learn math, to learn English, to learn languages and science, and be able to go out into the world fortified with information and the tools that they need to be successful adults in our society. And learning all about your gender and that you can switch pronouns when you're still in elementary school will only handicap kids. And all parents are seeing this so fully.
This is what happens. This is the crescendo of a flawed modern education model, the classical education model that our founding fathers were educated in until John Dewey and those maniacs obliterated it in the early 1900s, was about we are going to create a full human being who is wise. The technical stuff can always be added on later. We scrapped that because of an industrial model and Woodrow Wilson, who actually was a college president. They said, no, we must teach you technical stuff first and foremost, because wisdom is all just subjective. We're not going to study the ancients or the classics or Socrates or Plato or Aristotle or ask the questions of what is good, what is courage, what is justice, what is temperance, what is prudence. These questions that built Western society. This is a very predictable outcome. This is the apex. Mm-hmm. When you do this for 50 or 60 years, 1 minute remaining, Libby, your thoughts.
Yeah, I think that you're exactly right on that. And you even have the social emotional learning people, and I've talked to James Lindsay about this, and they come in there and they say that they need to teach empathy and socialization and all of this trash, and that they don't need to teach actual knowledge or information or books because kids can find all of that on Google. They actually say that in their literature, and it behooves all parents to make sure that their kids are learning properly. Read them books, read them, you know, the biographies of our great presidents. My son and I read John Adams' biography. We're reading all about Abraham Lincoln these days. We read the Bible together. And it's important to lay the foundation for morality, values, for deep thinking, for critical thinking. Understand the ancients. Understand all of this knowledge and wisdom that has been passed on. And the LGBTQ activists in schools, the social emotional learning people, want your kids to just be flops of flesh, desire seeking, useless creatures that are just suckling at the government handouts.
Hey everybody, Charlie Kirk here. Just when you thought it couldn't get any better, Mike Lindell with MyPillow is launching the MyPillow 2.0. That's right, you heard me, MyPillow 2.0. When Mike Lindell, great American patriot, invented MyPillow, it had everything you could ever want in a pillow, but now 20 years later, he discovered a new technology that makes it even better. The MyPillow 2.0 has a patented, adjustable fill on the original MyPillow, and now with a brand new fabric that is made with a temperature regulating thread. For exclusive listeners, the MyPillow 2.0 is buy one, get one free offer with promo code Kirk and get your best sleep ever. MyPillow 2.0 temperature regulating technology is 100% made in America and comes with a 10-year warranty and a 60-day money-back guarantee. Go to MyPillow.com and click on the radio listener square to buy one and get one free offer. Enter promo code Kirk or call 800-875-0425 to get your MyPillow 2.0 now. That is MyPillow.com, promo code Kirk. Check it out. Libby Emmons is with us, Post-Millennium Human Events. I spent some time with David Godwin, who wrote a book with Pete Hegseth this weekend in Boise, and he gave me this document published by his organization. It's David Goodwin, I'm sorry. The Ambrose Group. Discover Classical Christian Education. Let's take the education quiz. Libby, I think you're going to love this. What is education about? Is it about, A, success in college and in the job market are the primary reasons I send my kid to school? Or is it that if my child's education builds wisdom, the natural result will be success in life? Should it be education should be entertaining so that kids can enjoy their childhood, or education is a joy unto itself for the student who is taught to love learning? Should students need up-to-date training emphasizing technology and science to be prepared for the future, or students need broad-based knowledge in the context of a Christian worldview to be prepared for an uncertain future? The whole premise of how we are doing education is wrong. And Libby, we see this with the rise of the Parents Party. Modern education is largely a failed project. Look at the literacy rates. Look at the crime, the suicide. Libby, is it time for us to kind of reevaluate how we've been doing government education the last 20 or 30 or 40 years? The results are in, and it's tragic. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I thoroughly agree with that. I think the government public education model has been a disaster. I think it's important for government to provide education for America's youth, but all that they are doing right now is trying to turn children into manageable adults
yes.
who they can plug into the job market wherever they need to be. They're not trying to create critical thinking, successful adults who can live lives according to, you know, their own ideas and, you know, with wisdom and knowledge. And I think that that's really missing. I remember when I was in high school and I went to a very nice high school. It was a private school. And we learned about philosophy. We read Shakespeare. We read great books. Our teachers gave us lists of great books and said, go read all of these. We read Orwell. I remember an independent study where I was reading Franz Kafka and then having in-depth conversations with my remarkably intelligent English teacher about it. These were college professor grade people who decided that it was important to teach high school students and prepare them. I often have said that college was far easier than high school, and grad school yep. was even easier than college. And it's because the high school education that was provided to me was absolutely exceptional. And I can look out into the landscape now and see very, very successful people in media and across our culture who graduated with me, who went to the same high school that I did. And it, I think, is really sad that this is not the kind of education that everyone gets. Part of what we had was religious education that yes. we had every week. We studied political structures, we studied civics, we studied arts, and we didn't study them in terms of how we plug these into our corporate lives or how to get jobs. It was learning for the sake of learning, and that is what is missing here. And when you read about our founding, and when you read about our founding fathers and you read what they were up to, they were reading Cicero, they were reading, you know, Homer, they were reading all of these ancient things and gleaning what they could from those texts. They knew their Bible stories. And I think it's also really a shame what's been done to the English canon, because we don't read great books anymore. We read trendy books, and they have absolutely nothing to teach us.
The clarity between a modern education and a classical education can be like this. For example, a modern education is values neutral. All moral positions are relative, and hence all positions must be equally treated. A classical education actually believes in idealism, that standards of right and wrong exist in all subject areas, and students are taught to make judgments accordingly. That alone shows the contrast. A modern secular government education, most parents don't even realize this. Oh, you know, we have a nice football team or all this. No, no, no. What is the moral premise of the education that you're sending your kids to? A modern secular education will always experiment with new techniques and methods. A traditional will hold to educational standards that have a clear track record of success. 30 seconds. Libby, final thoughts.
You can even see this in the technical areas, how they're always changing the way math is taught. I'm sure that tons of parents can relate to me when I say that when my child brings home math curriculum, a lot of times I don't even understand the way that they're supposed to do it. It's not a traditional way, and it doesn't make any sense. I think it's so important that parents are fighting back against this stuff, and I'm in favor of remaking these government schools to be actually helpful for human beings. The only problem is the government doesn't care about our children. The government just wants to indoctrinate them into whatever the latest trendy nonsense is. And it also doesn't care about the future of our nation, because if they did, they would care about our kids and our kids being able to, you know, live up to the promises of our founding.
Check out Postmillennial and Human Events. Libby, great job. Thank you so much. Everybody, check out Young Women's Leadership Summit, tpusa.com/YWLS. Thanks so much for listening, everybody. Email us your thoughts, as always, freedom@charliekirk.com. Thanks so much for listening, and God bless.
For more on many of these stories and news you can trust, go to charliekirk.com.